Welcome to Inspiration and Transformation from the Banks of the Ganga with Sadhvi Bhagwati Saraswati, an American sannyasi living at the Parmarth Nikatan Ashram in Rishikesh, India. Sadhvi is president of the Divine Shakti Foundation, a charitable organization bringing education, vocational training, upliftment, and empowerment programs to women and children. Sadhvi is also Secretary General of the Global Interfaith WASH Alliance and Director of the world-famous International Yoga Festival. Join the musings of an American sannyasi as Sadhvi shares the wisdom and teachings of her guru, His Holiness, Pujya Swami Chidananda Saraswatiji.
Welcome, everyone, to Inspiration and Transformation from the Holy Banks of the sacred Ganga River in the land of Rishikesh, India. We all actually have the same purpose in life, every one of us. By sheer fact that we have a human birth, our purpose in life is to wake up. Our purpose in life is to realize the truth of who we are. Now, this is coming from the scriptures into today, meaning even from thousands of years ago when the scriptures were given to us. It's written that the human birth, the reason it is seen as the pinnacle of evolution, spiritual evolution, not just physical evolution, is because it's only in the human birth that we can be conscious of being conscious. Lots of nature acts a lot better than we do. We are certainly not the pinnacle of evolution in a lot of ways. But because we believe we are the only species that can actually be conscious of being conscious, it means we're the only species that has that ability to realize, oh, wait, I'm not the body. Oh, wait, I don't actually end here and you begin over there and there's empty space between us. Actually, we are one. Actually, that's me in there and you in here. And us in here. And it. So our purpose, if you are here in a human body, your purpose is to wake up, to realize. Not just intellectually, not just you read it in a book or heard it somewhere, but actually to realize in your experience the truth of who you are. To really know that who you are is infinite. That who you are is boundless. That who you are is soul, is spirit, is love. And you have a body. And the body is exquisite and wonderful and beautiful and an amazing tool we've been given to interact with the beauty of creation. The smells, the sights, the sounds, the touches. Clearly, sunsets have been given to us as so beautiful to use our eyes to interact with them and to love them. Clearly, music sounds so good because we've been given these ears to interact with it. Spirituality is not about pushing away the senses. It's about pushing away or becoming free of being a slave to the senses. If I'm free of the pull of them, then I actually am able to use them to experience this exquisite, amazing, wonderful creation that God has given us, this gift. Imagine you give somebody a gift, and then you go to their house, and they say, oh, I loved your gift so much. It's the most precious gift I've ever gotten. Look here, it's in this corner of my closet back here. See, under all my sweaters and jackets, and in the back corner of it. See, that's what you gave me, see? Would you be happy? You'd be like, no. You give somebody something, you want them to use it, to have it with them. Or if someone says, you know, I loved that gift you gave me so much, I have totally forgotten you gave it to me. I've worked really hard to forget you ever gave it to me. Would you be happy? Now you think God has given us this extraordinary, extraordinary body, extraordinary creation. With sunsets and flowers and music and water that tastes so good. Even a cup of hot tea that tastes so good. Really, just for us? To pretend we were never given it? To hide it and push it away and learn to not have it, not use it? Of course not. But to realize we aren't it. That it's been given to us as a gift to interact with the divine. To see a sunset and go, wow. It's like, do you have kids? Okay. So imagine that your kids, when they were young, made you drawings or paintings. Now, typically, when 2 and 3 and 4 year olds make paintings and drawings, they're not so good by an objective eye. But as parents, we love them, right? We tape them up all over. My kid made that. Well, when you look at that scribble and your heart fills with love, it fills with love not because it's such an extraordinary piece of art, but because you love the one who painted it. Your kid, see, there you go. In her bag, in Rishikesh, scribble by the kids, right? So, because you see it and it fills you with love, because you love the creator of it. So when we see the sunset, when we drink the water, when we hug the tree, when we hear the music, when we smell the flowers, it's this opportunity to use the senses to remember God, to remember the Creator, to remember who we are. And so all of this has been given to us as tools to wake up, not tools to become slaves. We have gone the other way. We've taken our senses and we've become a slave to them. Gotta have it, gotta have it, gotta have it. I need it, I need it. There's a pull, there's a hunger, there's a thirst, there's a desire, there's a this. So we become slaves. That's not what it was given to us for. It was given to us to help us connect with, interact with, remember the divine. So your purpose is to wake up. Your purpose is to experience the truth of who you are that is unbounded, that is infinite, that was never born, that will never die. To know that. And simultaneously, to love the creation with all of its foibles, with all of its problems. If we went around the room, we could all share about the different challenges and problems that our particular incarnation story has had. But to love it anyway. Because it is through that that we are here waking up. Everything that is given to you is given to you so that you can wake up. That's how this karma and destiny, it intersects so that what you're getting today is both a product of what you've done and is given to you in exactly the way, not as a reward or a punishment, but in exactly what you need to take your next step closer to God, to peel back your next layer. For some people, it's going to happen in poverty. For other people, it's going to happen in wealth. For some people, it's going to happen in failure. For others, it'll happen in success. For some, it's going to happen surrounded by people. For some, it's going to happen alone. It's not a reward or a punishment. Oh, you must have been good in a past life. That's why you're rich. No. The situation that you are in is exactly the most conducive situation with your karmic package for you to wake up. So use it and wake up. And along the way, you're going to also have these duties and these dharmas, and they'll change. You've got dharma and duty when you're young to your parents as a student. As you shift, as you become a wife, a mother, a daughter-in-law, a this or that, you've got duties to that. You've got different dharmas for that. And so we fulfill them. And that's that exquisiteness of life. And this, again, with the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna just gives it so perfectly. It's this very amazing back and forth between, oh, Arjuna, stand up, pick up the bow, string it, fight this battle, and oh, Arjuna, you are not the stringer of the bow. You are not the body. You were never born. You will never die. Those in front of you were never born. They will never die. Oh, Arjuna, aim the arrow this way. Oh, Arjuna, remember, you are not the doer. Oh, Arjuna, and just back and forth. Fight the war, fight it well, fight it sincerely, fight it fully. No, you don't get to run away. No, you don't get to take a break. No, you don't get to choose a different dharma. You're not the fighter. You're not the doer. You were never born. You never died. This entire thing is a drama. And do it well. And do it sincerely. And do it fully. Single-pointed focus. And remember, you're not the doer. And if you can really hold both of those at the same time, whatever I'm doing, fully, sincerely, completely, and I'm not the doer. That's your purpose. And then you use whatever you have as a tool in the hands of God. That's what it's all been given to us for. When we say nimitra matra, right? That tool, that instrument in the hands of the divine. Our bodies, our minds, our skills, our abilities, our time, it's all an instrument in God's hands. So whoever you are, whatever you can do, whatever you know, realize you're an instrument. And in order for an instrument to work, it has to be clear, right? This mic, well, this isn't as good an example, but the regular mic, the mic he has, normal mic, it could be the most expensive microphone in the world. It could be covered with diamonds and gold. But if it's waterlogged or full of dirt, it's not going to work. And so more important than the diamonds or the gold is to make sure that it's a clear vessel, a clear vehicle for that divine to flow through. So empty yourself. and realize that you're full.
You're listening to OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single
Circle of Hearts Radio is a sanctuary on the airwaves. Join me, Grandmother Alaya, in the circle on Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern, as I share information to both enlighten and nourish your soul.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back to Inspiration and Transformation. I'm so glad to have you all back here with me.
Whoever asked that question has actually asked two questions. They think they've only asked one question, but it's actually two, and here's why. So the question basically said, if when we die, we can't take anything with us. If this physical body and all of it is impermanent, why do people commit fraud? Why do they lie? Why do they cheat? Why do they steal? Okay, that's question one. But then the questioner went on and said, this distracts me from my practice, from my meditation, from my yoga. And to me, that's question two. Because if what other people are doing is distracting you, then that's a question. If it's not a question that you have, it's a question that I ask back to you. Why is it that other people's ignorance keeps you from being able to meditate? That's something for you to really look at. We'll take the first question first, but just recognize that in there is a whole other question. People lie and cheat and steal out of ignorance. In the Hindu tradition, in the teachings, the Vedic teachings, the teachings of what we call Sanatan Dharma, we don't speak about sin. When we talk about cheating and lying and stealing and harming and all of that which most of us would refer to as a sin, typically in Sanatan Dharma, we speak about it as ignorance. The core of who we are is pure, is perfect, is divine. So there's not a sense of you are a sinner. Every one of us, regardless of what you've done, you are divine. The core of you, the truth of you is divine. And when the mind falsely identifies as the body, when our sense of self falsely identifies as this physical being, and by physical being, by the way, I don't just mean the bones and the flesh, but it also means the whole workings of the brain, of the mind, of the thoughts, of the emotions. Because it's physical. It's chemical. It's electrical. It takes place in our physical brain, in the glands of our body. So much of what we think or we feel is coming off of, you know, the glands that sit on our kidneys or the glands and behind our eyes. So it's physical also. So when we falsely identify as the physical being, in that ignorance, we do all sorts of things. We lie, we cheat, we steal, because we find ourselves rooted in anger, greed, ego, competition, desires. All of those are rooted in ignorance. And those lead to our actions. I'm going to grab, I'm going to steal, I'm going to connive, I'm going to harm. But it's all due to ignorance. Because if I realize and I remember that actually I am whole, one with the divine, if I really remember, so hum, I am that. Ahumbam asmi, I am the divine. What's to lie to? What's to steal? What do I have to grab? Who is there to cheat? There is no one who's separate. There's no one who's other. Who to be angry at? Who to compete with? There is no us and them. It's all one. It's all self. So in the ignorance, my ignorant thoughts, my ignorant identification, I engage then in behaviors out of that ignorance. So that's why people do it. What you've basically said is, when the truth is that we are soul, none of this lasts. The soul is the only thing after the body dies. None of this stays, not my physical body, nothing I've acquired or attained. If that's true, then why do we do all these stupid things? And the answer is because people are living in ignorance and don't realize what's true. And that's where all of our suffering comes from. It's not a sense of, oh, you've been bad, you're being punished. The suffering that we experience is due to our own seeds of ignorance that we've planted. When we talk about the fruits of karma or bad karma, in my ignorance, I have planted seeds that bear fruit that lead to my suffering. Jealousy, anger, fear, all of that. These are emotions, feeling states that stem out of my own ignorance. And then, of course, when I engage in behaviors like lying and cheating and stealing and harming, well, then I've got a lot more of those suffering emotional states, because now I'm also worried I've done something wrong. There's guilt. There's more fear. There's all sorts of cognitive dissonance that has to take place in order for me to feel okay about what I've done, which means I have to generate a sense of thinking that everyone else is wrong, or thinking that what I did was right, rooting me more in the illusion of separation. So there's all kinds of mental states of suffering that come from that. The real question to me, though, is why what other people are doing, other people's ignorance, distracts you in your meditation? What that means is that you are still identified by how the people around you are thinking, acting, behaving toward you. Because you have to be honest, none of us, very few of us anyway, are distracted in our meditation or in our yoga Because a bunch of random, nameless, faceless people we don't know, who are not doing anything that in our conscious reality impacts us in any way, are lying, cheating, stealing in some other far-off corner of the world. We may think about it if we see the news or we see something on social media about some, you know, liars or cheats or thieves. But it's very few people who are so deeply connected and care so deeply about literally every thread of existence on this human planet that anybody being lied to, anybody being cheated, anybody being harmed hits them so deeply inside that it disrupts their meditation. For most of us, our vision is much shallower than that. We're much more self-centered than that. And so for most of us, the disruption to our sleep, our eating, our spiritual practice stems not from injustice in various villages of third world countries around the world, but the people living under our roof or in our company or in our friends' circle or in our social network, who are acting or being or living in ways that I don't like. And you need to ask yourself why that is impacting your meditation. And your meditation and your introspection needs to be about realizing that you are not the karmic police. You are not responsible for someone else's awakening. Yes, sure, each of us is a beautiful transmitter of love and peace. And if we have had deep, real, meaningful experiences of divine love that in our energetic beingness we can share with others, we are assets to the planet. But that doesn't mean that your job is to go through the world shoving your truth down people's throat. It means to just be that truth, be that light. The light will dispel the darkness. You don't have to run through the world shoving your candle down people's throats. Or in their eyes because they can't see. Just be the light. Slowly, slowly. When it's the right time for other people, they will see. And they may see it through you. They may see it through someone else. Through something else. But have faith and surrender in their own karmic package, because we're all just moving through the worlds in our own karmic packages and with our own toolboxes and with our own full set of all of it. And we're all doing the best we can. And so make sure that in your meditation, you can really be anchored and grounded in the light. Be that light. You don't have to take out a signboard that says it. You don't have to buy a t-shirt that says, you know, hey, I'm the light. Listen to me. Be like me. Even bugs are attracted to light. Even little insects are attracted to light. Just be the light. It will attract. It will magnetize. It will bring people toward it if it's real. Just be it. But first, you have to stop being dependent upon what other people are saying and doing. Just focus on what you're saying and doing, how you're thinking, how your meditation is. And only then only then can you really help others. As my Guru Pooja Swamiji says, only if you are in peace can you bring peace. If you're in pieces, it's all you're going to bring to the world. It's all you're going to manifest. So if you're distraught and upset and distracted and frustrated by what other people are doing, well, that's what you're going to bring to the world. So first find that peace inside. And then you'll bring peace wherever you go.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip with the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with Inspiration and Transformation. So this is a very fun place where spirit meets matter. So we have spiritual experience, spiritual awareness, and then we have a brain injury. And as he says, what happens to the person who was enlightened, who had done all of this spiritual work, had become enlightened and become awakened? Now they have a brain injury. Now they've lost consciousness. Is all of that work they've done over? Have they lost it? Because now they're disoriented. Now they don't necessarily know who they are. They've had some loss of consciousness. So the brain is not that which creates consciousness, nor is it consciousness, but it is the medium through which we interact with our consciousness. Now, when I use the word consciousness here, I don't mean the consciousness as in the medical sense of you are conscious or not, as in like you're in a coma or you're not in a coma. I mean the spiritual definition of consciousness. The brain is absolutely in charge of whether you are in a coma or not in a coma. But the spiritual consciousness that we have, the brain is the medium through which I interact with it. So when my brain is functioning well, I am able to sit down and meditate and bring my awareness to my breath and chant my mantra and have an experience of light, of love, of truth, of expansion, of oneness, of whatever it may be. I'm able then to stand up from my meditation and move through the world with that awareness. Okay, now brain injury comes. Now I am either unconscious, literally in the medical sense, Or I've just had such a traumatic injury that I've had a personality change or whatever it is that's happened in all the examples. That's only a change in my physical brain. It's only a change in my ability to interact with consciousness. It's not a change in the presence of that consciousness. So for example, the sun is shining. My windows are open, my curtains are open. I'm experiencing the sun. Now something happens, and suddenly my curtains close. Well, the sun is still there. I just have lost at this moment my ability to interact with the presence of the sun because these curtains have come down. But it doesn't change the presence of the sun. All it has changed is my ability to interact with that. So for example, in my life, I witnessed a woman very, very close to us suffer from Alzheimer's disease. And as she suffered from Alzheimer's disease, I watched her forget much of her family in completely different ways, where she had loved and had loved very deeply. Now, did that love, that deep, I don't mean the attachment, I don't mean the relationship, but the actual presence of love, did it disappear on some dendrites and glial cells? Of course not. Because it doesn't exist there. If it disappeared because some of the cells in my brain were degenerating, it would have had to imply that it actually existed there, which it didn't. But the connection of those cells enabled her to interact with that, to remember it. That no longer is there. But it doesn't mean that the energetic, spiritual presence of love isn't there. The work that I've done to wake up, that consciousness that we've touched, that's with us. Because look, when you go from one life to another life, let's shift for a moment from being unconscious in the brain to literally being physically dead. When you shift from one body to another body, along with the soul, the subtle body goes, right? Man, buddhi, ahankar, travels with the soul. Now, that is where that spiritual work that I have done, it's not sitting in my blood cells somewhere. My awareness, my consciousness, my awakening, my enlightenment, my truth, my presence as love, not my love of you because you bring me flowers, but just that experience, that presence, that transmitter of love. That's not taking place in some cell someplace. That's me connecting with me. That self meets self. That's oneness. That doesn't exist physically someplace. When you die, the sadhana that you've done, the spiritual practice that you've done, that's why when we speak about the law of karma and rebirth, you're carrying that with you into your next life. Well, even if you weren't brain dead before you died, you're certainly brain dead after you die. So if you needed the brain to be healthy to benefit from your spiritual experience, it wouldn't go with you into the next life. So, no, you don't lose it. No, the brain is not where it is held and stored. On the other hand, the brain does change as we have spiritual experiences. When you meditate, it literally changes your brain. They've done enough extraordinarily exciting mapping of, you know, monks meditating. So we know what happens in the brain, A, while we're meditating, and B, long-term changes. But those long-term changes are things that lead to me being better able to navigate my way through the world in oneness, in love, in compassion, in simple things like patience, foresight, understanding, broad vision. That's where the brain comes in and plays that role. But consciousness is not of the brain. Yeah, you're right. We need it to interact with consciousness. When I'm brain dead, I'm no longer conscious of being conscious. But it hasn't taken away who I really am. That which I've touched, that way I've expanded. Because that's energy. Not just electrical signals in my brain, but actual energy between me and the world. That's energy of soul, energy of spirit. And that doesn't rely on the brain.
This is OTRFM, part of the IOM radio network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Baldwin with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. I grew up loving circuses and other traveling animal shows, but it never occurred to me what life might be like for the animals. Training wild animals to do things they don't understand takes force. Routine discipline with a hook or whip or the heel of a boot shows the animal exactly who's the boss. Don't patronize animal acts. Please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals.
757-622-PETA.
Welcome back. This is Sadhvi Bhagavati Saraswati with inspiration and transformation.
Time is very short. Whether we have another 60, 70, 80 years, or another 6, 7, 8 days, none of us knows. 6, 7, 8 minutes. There's no guarantee, no warranty this body comes with, guaranteed for at least 70, 80 good years. There's no guarantee. So even age isn't anything to go by. So yes, time is very short, and the universe is very patient. If we don't make it this time around, we'll come back. This whole cycle of reincarnation, that's what it's there for. It's there to give us this infinite number of opportunities to get it right, to learn the lesson, to find that purpose. So it's up to us. And I mention this because we're already stressed enough There's already enough deadlines. We already have so many to-do lists, so many action items, so many reminders constantly beeping us. So many ways in which we already feel like we fall short. So don't let this be yet another thing that you're not good at. Don't let it be yet another thing that you feel guilty about. Oh yeah, haven't exercised today and still haven't found my purpose. Don't let it be like that. Recognize. Time is infinite. There's a beautiful saying that if you imagine a mountain, and the mountain is a mile high and a mile long. Mile high mountain, mile wide mountain. And once, every 100 years, a bird flies by that mountain with a silk scarf in its beak. And it brushes that silk scarf against the 100-foot-tall, no, sorry, mile-tall, mile-wide mountain. Brushes that silk scarf against it once in 100 years. The amount of time it would take for that mountain to be eroded by that silk scarf, that's as long as we've been doing this, as long as we've been coming back again and again. And so while on the one hand, time is very short, and this human life is very precious, on the other hand, exhale. Take a deep breath. You've got time. But here's what's important to think about. What are your priorities? Because that purpose, the only purpose that really matters, is that purpose of waking up. The highest purpose is not about figuring out, are you supposed to go to medical school or law school? Or are you supposed to do this teacher's training program or that teacher's training program? Or are you supposed to get this master's degree or a diploma in that? Should you get a job right away? Should you go back to school? That's not the question of the highest purpose. They're beautiful options. They open up a world of possibilities. That's not the highest purpose that you're here to figure out. So don't confuse the what with the who. Meaning, don't confuse the what you do with the who you are. Your highest purpose is not about figuring out what to do. Your highest purpose is figuring out who you are. And when you know who you are, you're going to know what to do in all of the ways that matter. And so ask yourself, what's my priority? Is my highest priority figuring out what job to get? Or is my highest priority figuring out the truth of who I am? Because we've only got a certain number of hours each day. Our brain can only focus on one thing at a time. So you can't simultaneously run north and south at the same time. So it doesn't mean don't have a beautiful job. It doesn't mean don't be in the world or involve yourself, engage yourself, enjoy. It doesn't mean that. But it means ask yourself, what's my priority? Is my priority to figure out who I am? If it is, then the what is going to be things that are geared toward that. It's going to be practices, paths. That allow me, in the fullest and most complete sense, to step up to that plate, to accept that beautiful invitation that the universe has given us to wake up now, right now. No prerequisites required. Right now, to know who you are. Or is the focus on, how am I going to get to the top of the food chain? How am I going to have the highest income? How am I going to have the most prestige? How am I going to get on the cover of that magazine? Because if those are the priorities, then it's a different focus. But lastly, when the focus becomes knowing who you are, it doesn't mean that you don't act in the wild. In fact, my favorite spiritual scripture teaching is the Bhagavad Gita, which is rooted in the whole premise, the whole tenet of action, of doing our duty, of standing up, of being engaged. But engaged as a tool in the hands of the divine. Being engaged not about my will, what I want, how I want it, when I want it, what I think is fun, what I think is glamorous, what I think I enjoy, but rather how I, with my talent, with my ability, with my energy, with my resources, how I am supposed to be the tool in the hands of the divine. So yeah, time is short, but the beautiful thing is, it only takes a moment. It only takes a moment to wake up. But you have to choose which moment and when. There's a beautiful story of a student, a seeker, in a monastery with the guru. And he says to the guru one day, he says, I'm not experiencing God. I want to experience God, but I'm not experiencing God. And when I meditate, my mind wanders. So the guru takes the disciple out to the river. Takes him into the river, and he holds his head under the water. And the disciple's thrashing about, trying to get up. He can't breathe, gasping for air. Finally, at the very last minute, before he actually passes out, the guru pulls him out of the water. The disciple's panting, gasping for breath. And the guru says, "Did your mind wander?" The disciple's like, "No, my mind didn't wander. All I was thinking about was air. I just wanted air." And the guru says, "When you want God, like you wanted air, your mind won't wander. Want God, want awakening, the way that you wanted air when you were drowning, and your mind will stop wandering." So when you want that more than you want anything else, you'll find it.
This brings to a close this hour of inspiration and transformation. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so glad to be together with you all each week. And I look forward to being together again next Thursday, same time, on OM Times Radio.